The world is changing at a faster pace than ever before. As we begin the path to recovery after worldwide disruption, this podcast explores how the design industry can adapt to changing expectations and create a better future for your businesses and consumers. I'm your host, Peter Marion, and you're listening to Create Tomorrow, the WGSN podcast. Retail again is in a state of flux. The pandemic has led to huge shifts in consumer behavior in 2020, and this is set to continue into 2021. For instance, in the US alone, 11,000 stores closed and 40 major retailers went bankrupt last year. Online spending also reached new heights, accounting for 27.3% of global overall retail sales, growing by a third over the course of the year. While vaccines are being rolled out and there is hope on the horizon, recovery is going to come in fits and starts. The so-called K-shaped recovery means that the consumer landscape remains complicated, as many people are experiencing a reduction in their willingness and capacity to spend. As this seismic shift continues to take place, retailers need to adapt for a future where digitally facilitated shopping trips are the norm, pathways to product discovery are completely disrupted, and the role of the store will change while serving an increasingly impatient and demanding consumer. Today, I'm joined by some of my colleagues to discuss the future of retail sector and how businesses will need to adapt. I've got Sydney Morgan-Petro, Head of Retail and Buying on WGSN Fashion. Hi, Sydney.
Hi, Peter. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Doing well.
And we've also got Laura Saunter, who's a Senior Strategist on WGSN Insight. Hi, Laura.
Hi, Peter. How are you?
I'm great. And how are you?
I'm good, thank you.
And lastly, we have Athena Chen, who is a Senior Strategist on WGSN Insight. Hi, Athena. How are you?
Hi, Peter. I'm good. I'm currently based in Shanghai, and we're having rainy weather today, but hopefully it'll pick up throughout the week.
Oh, fingers crossed. But to kick off, what do we expect for the retail sector in 2021? Sydney, do you want to kick off?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think, you know, clothes for clothing's sake is something we're going to see the end of. So as I was saying, you know, going back into the shops, a lot of the old formats do feel a bit stale. So I think, you know, towards the later end of 2020, retailers hadn't really taken the opportunity to pivot and to, you know, really shake up the floor sets and make it feel more relevant to what the customer was going through. So I think going into 2021, we're really going to see them, you know, finally realizing that and making sure that the product categories that they're putting out front are super relevant for what people need and want right now. So I think you'll see a lot more emphasis on lifestyle merchandising, bringing home goods into the mix, doing a little bit more of a high-low, especially when it comes to the apparel retailers, because they're realizing that that isn't, you know, maybe always the main priority. So we're seeing a lot of brands reach out into home goods and do these exciting new collaborations, a lot of brands partnering with direct-to-consumer and bringing those digitally native brands into their mix too. So I think it's just going to be a lot of capturing the consumer's attention and just making sure that they have a more interesting offer that's just not one channel.
And I think what you said there about not really meeting their new lifestyles, I think the consumer's life and their perspectives on the world have changed so much over the past year. And Laura, you do one of the most special pieces of research that come out each year. It's called the Shopper Forecast, and that's just gone live on the site. So I was just wondering if you could speak a little bit from the consumer perspective around what they're feeling and going through and what we can expect from them for 2021.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think one of the things that's most important to note is that the events of 2020 have left a really, really big impression on consumer behavior. One of the biggest drivers that we've seen with the shift to everything digital is this massive effect it's had on sort of expectations of consumers around all aspects of fulfillment, really, sort of speed of delivery, ease of return, transparency of delivery, that kind of thing. You know, where's my parcel? When's it coming? How fast? And as well, a sort of shift towards affordability that we're seeing a bit more as well. And consumers being a bit more demanding around sustainability in terms of the packaging that they're receiving with their online orders. How green is their delivery? And, you know, I think one of the main things that we're also seeing is that consumers are being quite contradictory, back to Sydney's point about sort of shopping across channels. I think, you know, in store, they're quite demanding over safety and, you know, how sort of hygienic the store is. They want to feel safe. They want to feel secure. It has to be compelling enough for them to actually, you know, go there. But at the same time, they want to get in and out really quickly. They want to know that their products are going to be in stock. And then, you know, online, it's all about sort of speed and streamlining the process. But at the same time, conversely, they want it to be an experience, because if they're not having that sort of in-store experience that we used to have, where you'd go out and discover products that way and sort of be entertained, then, you know, how is that being recreated online? So it's this kind of contradictory behavior that we're seeing, and shoppers are sort of, they don't really know how to feel. Everyone's a bit sort of all over the place, and they've got these new mindsets and attitudes towards spending that are really coming out with these different shopper profiles and different shopper groups. Some of them are being driven by value, some of them being driven by values, as in, you know, shopping with their local communities, shopping with minority owned businesses, that kind of thing. So in answer to your question, it's a bit all over the place, but there's definitely sort of pockets of growth here and there.
Absolutely. And I think we'll continue exploring these shopper groups and what they're going to mean for retail over the course of the next year in this episode, because there's so much happening and there's so much to discuss. But before we go into that, Athena, let's talk a little bit about what's happening in Asia. You've come through the pandemic, kind of, and things are almost back to normal. And so what does that mean from a consumption perspective? I mean, some of the things that you've been talking about really are that the behaviors have changed, even though things are going back to normal. So can you explore that a little bit more?
Yes. So I think in shoppers in Asia, they were already quite fast adopting to digital channels and shopping online. And this is kind of due to a more established kind of digital infrastructure already in place. So in China, we have WeChat Pay, and across Korea and Japan, they have like Line Pay, Kakao Pay, which is like really closely tied to their social media platforms. So I think what's interesting in Asia is, even though the pandemic is largely over and we're allowed to kind of move around more freely, people are still very stuck to their kind of online habits that they formed throughout the pandemic. People are still looking for a lot of entertainment online and connecting with brands and retailers online more. So I still think brands and retailers really need to up their digital efforts to maintain relationships, even though movement restrictions are kind of loosened. So definitely, you know, looking more at like how data can power their retail operations to understand consumer preferences, because Asia shoppers are really kind of discerning on, you know, how quickly they can find stuff online. And they're really looking at recommendations from their social group as well. So social commerce is definitely a very big and very booming kind of sector in Asia. And I think also with the rise of live streaming and short videos, retailers need to look at how they're changing their merchandising online as well. Because in the past, it was just static images and text, but now with video added to the mix, we're definitely seeing things being shaken up online. There are a lot of short videos added to e-commerce platforms, and I think that retailers and brands also need to think about how they can engage with consumers through video content as well.
Yeah, and I think that's a really big trend that's coming through, is this idea of product discovery. I mean, Laura, you've written quite a bit about this in the past, where that idea of like going to a shopping mall to go browsing and exploring the shops on a Saturday afternoon is changing. So, you know, where you used to go and have that experience in a physical retail store, you're now really seeking that experience online. And a lot of that is coming through either through live streaming or different kinds of digital experiential sort of strategies that are really starting to emerge. But to go back to the physical retail space, I mean, obviously, Sydney, you've been shooting retail. You're on the shop floor for a lot of the time, really. And so can you explore a little bit more about what's been happening there? And I mean, you said that retailers haven't really changed as much as you would have expected through the pandemic period. So can you explore that a little bit more?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so I think that's one of the things that, you know, I've been discussing with our London team also since about September, was the pace at which retailers responded. And I think in London, it was a bit faster than what I'd seen in the shop floors in New York. But all in all, in store here, not a lot has changed. There's definitely more of an emphasis from the consumer's perspective on things like the value sector, where you can just feel the difference in the stores. That they're very, very busy, and there wasn't a time when they weren't busy when they were open. So, but going, you know, back into a lot of the luxury sector and the premium shops, you could definitely feel that the foot traffic had lessened a lot across New York. But I think speaking to the discovery factor, I think that's going to be one of the most important in-store changes for 2021 as well. So whereas we used to talk a lot about experiential here in the States pre-COVID, I think we're going to see that shift towards discovery, where it's less about the touch and feel, obviously, because, you know, consumers are not really wanting to get hands-on, let's say, in the stores right now. But they still want to feel engaged and excited and, you know, explore new brands and new ideas. So I think a shop like Schofields, I think, is a really, really great example. It's a store here in New York. They opened, I think, 2018. And they work with a lot of digitally native brands. And it's really kind of set up almost like a maze of a shopping experience where you wander through. It's very heavy on the visual merchandising and very heavy on the storytelling. So you're getting exposed to all these new brands and as you walk through. So it really feels like something you can't do online. It gives you a reason to kind of come into the shop. So I think that this type of experience is going to be something that we see more of going forward.
Absolutely. And I think that I wonder if the slide still in there? Because, I mean, there must be adaptations. Really? Okay, fantastic.
It is, but it's not very, advertised. Whereas before, you know, it was very centrally displayed and, you know, everybody, you know, takes a ride and you can get a photo of yourself, you know, coming down the slide. But now it's kind of behind, like, a magic door. So if you're in the know or if, you know, like, the shop associate can take you one by one to do it in a very like sanitary way.
Okay, I see. So it has changed a little bit. And one of the things when we were prepping this episode, you were talking about really how there was some really marked differences, particularly in New York City store estates, in terms of, you know, certain parts of the city just being completely empty and there being huge numbers of retail sort of empty leases. Can you talk a little bit more about that and where you're sort of seeing those shifts take place?
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, it was really dependent neighborhood by neighborhood. But for example, you know, down the main stretch of Broadway and Soho, which is traditionally such a big, buzzy shopping area, there's a lot of permanent store closures there. So you could definitely feel the difference. But when I was out, you know, for back to school shopping, any place that had kids' clothing, anything within the value sector, these places were still booming. You couldn't even tell, you know, without the masks that anything was really happening. It felt very normal. But definitely the higher end shops is where I felt it hit the hardest. Also, during a lot of 2020 in New York, shops were literally boarded up. During the protests around the election. So it kind of added to that feeling where it just looked a bit post-apocalyptic. And I think that really did affect the shopper mood as well.
One of the things you talked about was this shift to affordability, and a stat that we've reported on the site was that 44% of consumers across a number of different markets, including China, the US, UK, France, and Germany, and I think a couple of others as well, had said that they had experienced a decline in income over the pandemic period. So there's a lot of people that are really experiencing new financial circumstances. But then on the flip side of that, there's also some people that are experiencing better financial situations because you know, they're not experiencing, they don't have that expenditure on travel, on restaurants, on those things that they used to do during the day-to-day periods because of lockdowns and obviously a lot of travel restrictions. So one of the things, but they are still spending less because they're sort of feeling concerned about their futures. So one of the things I wanted to talk about is this shift to affordability and also how that's interacting with some of the value stuff. Laura, that's something that you sort of flagged up. Do you want to start talking about that?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think one of the main things this year is that people will be a bit more cautious about spending. As you say, you know, it goes back to that sort of financial anxiety that everyone's suffering because of the pandemic and the recession, and everyone's operating with this kind of a bit more frugal mindset, sort of reassessing values, reassessing priorities. But I think the main driver that people want more and more this year is value for money, and knowing that, you know, what they are spending on is going to be durable, that's going to be good quality, that's going to last a long time. Maybe they're looking for, you know, cheaper alternatives to something that they once splurged on. And I think this is something that's really affecting all consumers, irrespective of how secure they might feel financially. Savings are being prioritized a lot more. And as I say, people are sort of planning for their future a lot more. And interestingly, this is driving new behaviors in shopping and the way that people are using apps. We're seeing lots of price comparison sites, as well as these kind of dupe aggregators, I guess you can call them, essentially apps where you can search for an expensive product, for example, in beauty or skincare, and it will serve you up with an item that's considered to be just as effective as the real deal, but it might be, you know, a fifth of the price. And this is something that's really getting a lot of interest and a lot of traction, especially with younger consumers, because they want to feel that they're buying a good product that's great, but it's a lot better value for money, and really kind of taps into people's concerns around personal finances.
And I was wondering, because obviously China has come through the pandemic, it's sort of seeming like things are better now there. But this shift to value is taking place in China as well, isn't it, Athena?
Yes, definitely. I think because there's still a lot of uncertainty stemming from kind of like the global situation, and people are, you know, they're optimistic, but they're still looking at the future in a more cautious kind of way. So I think definitely that idea of like looking for more value for money has been manifesting itself in a really interesting way. It's like the we already had Singles Day, which was this huge shopping festival, but in China we're now seeing almost like a major shopping festival every month. So, you know, these brands and platforms are constantly, you know, giving people a reason to come out and buy. And I've been seeing stats on how people are delaying their purchases because they want to buy during these major shopping festivals. And that has certainly expanded into Southeast Asia as well, because China's top e-commerce platforms like Alibaba, they are also leading e-com in Southeast Asia. So definitely we're seeing this big wave of shopping festivals that are driving actual retail spend in Asia.
I think that's interesting what you say about people delaying purchases, waiting for shopping festivals, because I think over here we're seeing a similar thing with people delaying purchases, except they're not actually delaying buying them, they're delaying paying for them, which speaks to that shift towards value and people sort of having a bit more of a frugal mindset, because we've seen this huge, huge uptick in people using Afterpay services and, you know, pay in installment services like Afterpay, PayPal, that sort of thing, and sort of stretching out credit so that, you know, they can buy something now, they can have that sort of dopamine hit of buying it. Maybe they're impatient, they're looking for that kind of gratification of buying something that otherwise, you know, they'd have to save up for over time. Or, you know, they're a bit more value conscious and they think, you know, I need this item now, but I'd rather pay for it later. So we are seeing this huge, huge rise in people looking to use these Afterpay services. And I think it's going to really have a big impact on loyalty and purchasing decisions in the future, because the more that people become accustomed to it and they use them, the more they'll be looking for them. And if the option isn't there at the checkout to stretch out the payment, maybe they won't convert. Maybe they'll go to another retailer that is offering the ability to do so.
And there's so much in the Afterpay narrative in terms of like the consumer expectation, which is that it is sort of becoming an expected norm. But then there's also the other side of this, which is why are people using Afterpay services? And I mean, there's some fantastic use cases where you start to think about all the shifts in online shopping behavior with people spending more of their money online. And so that means that they're maybe buying multiple sizes of an item and they don't want to have to pay for them up front and things like that. But the concerning side of it is that obviously, with a lot of it being largely picked up by young people, is that the credit issue that's going to come when those kids can't pay for those purchases. And that's really quite concerning, because there does seem to be like a shift that's taking place where there are some campaigners that are starting to get quite antsy about sort of this free-flowing kind of credit that's not being regulated in the same way.
Yeah, and I think the responsibility should really be on the retailers and on the merchants, the buy now, pay later merchants, to, you know, educate consumers about good finance and to say to them, you know, it is easy to sign up for this service, but, you know, if you miss your payment, that will affect your financial health and your credit rating, because it's easily done, especially if you're younger and, you know, you're just entering your sort of purchasing years. But back to what you were saying about, you know, buying lots of different types of items, but, you know, bracketing, as we call it in retail, buying multiple colours or sizes or styles. We have seen a huge uptick in that as well. And that's another big shift we've seen in the last year about sort of repeat returning, and people aren't just buying more products online than ever before. They're also returning them. There's some huge, huge numbers, especially in the US over the holiday season. I think there was $70.5 billion worth of returns. Just from online shopping. So people are really thinking about the returns policies and the return process as well now, as a sort of really key part of the purchasing journey.
To go into a little bit more depth about the shopper forecast, Laura, could you please tell us about one of the key cohorts that you want to talk about that might be really key for our clients coming into 2021?
Yeah, definitely. So I think within the physical store, it's going to be about servicing this kind of mission-based shopper. So someone who's really shopping with purpose, they want that faster, more kind of streamlined experience that I talked about. It's not about slow browsing anymore. It's just about intentional purchasing. Often they've Googled what they want. They know what they want before they go into the shop. And they're searching online to see whether it's going to be in stock before they go out. I think more and more we're seeing people using these kind of inventory tracking apps and searching for in stock near me, these kind of search trends, because people want to know when the products are available. Is it going to be worth their while them going into the store? And, you know, when they go in, they are very much on a mission. They want their things to be in stock. If the queues are too long or the layouts are too confusing, you know, they will leave and they will take their business elsewhere. So being able to find things quickly and easily has very much become a priority. They're looking at sort of wayfinding tools built into apps, external platforms that, you know, help them know if their item's in stock. I think if you look at a really good case study that's kind of servicing this mission-based shopper in the physical store, is what Walmart is doing with its store network in America. So they're redesigning all of their physical spaces, taking cues from actually the layout of airports to really, really simplify the journey. And they're kind of directing people at the entrances with these simplified store guides that match up with what you're seeing on your app. So you can kind of go around the store. It's very, very thoughtfully laid out. And all of the aisles are marked with the kind of letter and number combinations matched up on your app. And there's lots of sort of messaging about where the categories are dispersed. And it's all very simplified. And it's sort of serving that mission-based shopper. And it goes back to what I was saying about this idea of speed and convenience and these higher expectations that people are having around, you know, discovery and purchase through to delivery. And I think what's really interesting is even, you know, categories like luxury and, you know, auctions, which in the past were something that you would wait for and you would go through this competitive bidding process. Everything's going online and everything's going super speedy now. So Sotheby's, the auction house, the global auction house, is actually allowing consumers to have instant access to its luxury items for the first time. So they've launched this marketplace online. It's called Buy Now. And you can buy, you know, fine jewelry, art, collectibles, sneakers, handbags, whatever. You no longer have to go through that bidding process or wait for an auction. So it's all about getting it here and now, higher expectations around speed. And I think that's going to be one of the biggest shifts that we're going to continue to see this year.
So it's like the eBay Buy Now button, but for very, very high-end luxury goods.
Exactly, yeah.
Athena, what's the resonance for this kind of shift in Asia?
I think what Laura was talking about is kind of how people are really precise in their shopping. And I think in Asia that, like I previously mentioned, I think a lot of people have shifted to shopping online. And what that means is brands really need to kind of partner with these large e-commerce platforms to understand, you know, forecasting and understand where the demand is. And so what we're seeing is platforms such as Alibaba or JD.com, they're really upping their AI-powered algorithms to really partner with brands and retailers to pinpoint, you know, which regions are demanding what kind of products. And I think to be very precise and on demand, we're also seeing smart factories in China really maturing now. So brands can partner with these smart factories to actually produce, you know, customized products that are tailored to consumer demand, so they can be really precise in their shopping. So I think a lot of that activity is still really happening online. And if we were to talk about offline shopping, I think in Asia, you know, consumers are so like social media obsessed. Offline locations are really becoming places for them to create social worthy content. And they're really kind of hungry for all this kind of new content after, you know, they've been stuck inside their homes for 2020. They're really looking out to kind of like enjoy and experience physical spaces. And we're seeing a lot of shops in China really trying to create more flexible store formats that can, you know, be Instagram worthy and help consumers create, you know, really exciting and engaging content online.
And onto our last sort of main major topic for this episode, how are ethics and sustainability going to drive spending in 2021? Sydney, you've done some research on this recently, which was really looking at our barometer data that really explored how consumers were actually spending in this space. So can you give us a little bit more detail on that?
Yeah, absolutely. So we measure the different types of corporate social responsibility factors that matter to the consumer. And we've been doing this survey year on year for, I think, the past 3 to 4 years. So we have a lot of historical data that shows, you know, the greater overarching trends over time. And essentially, within this past last half of 2020, we saw inclusivity rising as a concern across the US and the UK, a focus on community that was the fastest rising in the last 6 months. Out of everything we asked about, ethical labor was a big, big increase year over year. And I think that really was highlighted by the pandemic and the vulnerability of all the garment workers in the fashion industry. So that's something that definitely matters a lot more to the consumer than it did this time last year. But just accountability in general from brands, transparency, and then the environmental concerns. So this is one that's very interesting to me because it's always been, as long as we've been doing this survey, the leading factor in the UK. But the US has actually been quite far behind, even taking a bit of a dip last year. So we're on the rise again. It's getting better. So year on year, it's getting better. But, you know, we're still lagging a bit behind from a global sense. I think one of the things in 2021 that you're really going to see, especially here, is that consumers do want sustainable products and sustainable brands, but it must also be affordable. That's one of the biggest drivers. So, you know, and that's not an easy ask for brands, but I think that we're going to see more of our value retailers taking that into account and really trying to deliver that to the consumer, because sustainability at a price is definitely something that's going to rise here in the US.
I wanted to ask one last question. It's something that a client actually asked me recently, which is, if you know, one of the things that we saw and Sydney that you sort of highlighted is this shift around community and inclusion. And if you're a large retailer or a business, how do you show that you are capable of being community focused if you are a large business?
There's been a lot of cross collaboration with global brands. That was a word that we were using a lot in our reporting last year, where it's, you know, global, but also local focus at the same time. And I think showing that to your consumers really proves your commitment to community. And we're definitely seeing, you know, that taking market share with sites like Etsy doing so, so well, right? They're really focusing on the artisan or, you know, the craftsperson and highlighting them as an individual. And we're definitely seeing brands, big brands, jump on this. I know last summer, or I guess 2 summers ago, American Eagle was a really good example, and they opened up a, you know, slow fashion boutique, and they tested it out in the Hamptons first, and it was only stocking brands that, you know, were kind of anti-fast fashion, really, and promoting that idea of a, you know, slow growing brand that nurtures the artist and fully represents them. So it was really interesting to see such a major, you know, brand that's in, you know, every mall across America, really trying something new in this slow space. And I think we're going to see a lot more of our bigger brands adopting that method.
And I'm going to move to my last question that I always ask in every episode. What is one short-term and one long-term strategy that businesses should be implementing to take advantage of the shifts that are taking place around retail? Athena, would you like to kick off?
Well, yes. So I think a short-term strategy would definitely, everybody's moving to mobile, and I think brands should really be adopting a mobile first format and looking how mobile can sort of work as a bridge between offline and online connections, because in China, everything is definitely moving into more omni-channel territory, and leveraging China's mobile ecosystem is really helpful to explore how online and the offline experience can be joined through live streaming and WeChat mini programs to really create a more engaging and personalized shopping experience. So definitely in the short term, brands definitely need to up their investment in that. And I think on the longer term, they definitely need to think about how to work with data powered partners, because everything is increasingly moving online. And I think brands and retailers need to kind of understand how to partner strategically to understand their data and build smarter shops and kind of work with more AI-powered algorithms to really understand changing consumer demands in real time, and really using data-led consumer insights to create a more customized kind of shopping experience for consumers in the long term.
Fantastic. And what about you, Sydney?
I think in the short term, and this is probably an unpopular answer, but we're already seeing a lot of store closures. And I just want to put maybe a better spin on this. I think that this is an essential opportunity for brands to right size. And this is just an inevitable shift with the, you know, acceleration of e-commerce adoption, that, you know, in this new omni-channel world, there's just too many stores, physical stores out there. So it's going to have to happen. It is a bit of a painful process, you know, for many. But once we get a better balance between our online and offline presence for these stores, it's going to be a much healthier future for them. So I think this is a very, you know, kind of necessary short-term step. I think long-term, and we're already seeing this for spring-summer 21 for a lot of the previews that we've worked with, that brands are having to shift into new categories and try, you know, new brands, new third-party brands. You know, maybe they're traditionally just an apparel retailer, and now they're getting into home goods as well, but we're really having to shake it up to remain relevant. So I think, you know, brands that are only going to stay tried and true to their category that they've, you know, had for so long and are not willing to pivot, are not going to potentially feel as relevant to the customer going forward. So I think right sizing in the short term, and then, you know, really branching out into new categories for the long term.
Fantastic. Thank you so much. And what about you, Laura?
I think in the short term, give consumers a little lift. I think everyone's a bit ready to cheer themselves up. People are looking for these little moments of joy, of happiness, however small. So things like, you know, giveaways, fun product discovery tools online, that sort of thing. Just any way that you can make a consumer feel kind of joyful and happy, experiential e-commerce, that sort of thing, like giving people a bit of a sense of escapism. And in the long term, I think it's really going to be about redefining the role of the store, because, you know, people aren't going to come to stores without very good reason to in the future, especially when you can get everything online so quickly now. So I think retailers are going to have to gain a very, very deep understanding of new behaviours, new preferences, and envision a new role for the store in light of these shifts, and think about changes to format, sizes, experience, location, and, you know, think about how spaces can really boost confidence and re-engage shoppers.
And that's all we have time for today. Thanks for listening to the WGSN podcast. If you've enjoyed what you've heard, then please subscribe to us. You can find us on all major podcast platforms. And if you really like what you heard, then please leave us a rating and review. It really does help us to get the word out there. If you want to learn more about what we've been talking about today, then head over to WGSN.com to find out how you can get access to much more insight and analysis. And if you're already a WGSN subscriber, head over to the site where we've pulled together some of our research on the future of retail with key points from this podcast in one handy report. Thanks to our guests for being here, and I'd like to thank our show producers, Roland Bodenham and Bethan Ryder. And again, thank you for being here. Please stay well and healthy, and we'll see you again next time. Bye.